Hey, what's up, Cub fans? Welcome to episode 85 of Locked On Cubs. I'm your host, Ryan Davis of The Sporting News, The Athletic, CubsInsider.com, Bet Chicago, and the Cloud City Chronicle. If you missed it, my first at Bet Chicago went live. The site hasn't launched yet, but they're posting articles to their Facebook page. If you follow me on Twitter at Ryan Q. Davis, you can read it. I wrote about Jake Arrieta and Yu Darvish in Arrieta's return to Wrigley Field, and a couple reasons why you shouldn't be using Jake Arrieta as a measuring stick for Yu Darvish and his performance this year. So, this is episode 85 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day, except when Ryan's internet goes out, then it's your team when it can happen, I guess. The Cubs won again on Thursday, taking 2 out of 3 with the Phillies at Wrigley. We'll talk about that and how that all happened in the first segment. Second segment, I've just got fun with numbers, some stats over the course of recent periods of time, and some bullpen numbers. And then finally, we'll do our Around the NL Central segment in the third segment. So 2 out of 3 with the Phillies at Wrigley. Extra impressive when you consider that the Phillies were one strike away on Wednesday from making it a potential sweep opportunity in the final game. But the Jason Hayward grand slam flipped that all around. Tyler Chatwood started again for the Cubs on Thursday, and he was back up to his old tricks. Chatwood threw 107 pitches to get through 4 2/3 innings. He allowed 4 hits and 1 earned run, striking out 6 batters, which all sounds pretty good, but he also walked 7, which really built up his pitch count and kept him in trouble throughout the day. Brian Dunson came in, got him out of a jam in the 5th inning, and then also pitched the 6th. The Cubs scored 4 runs on the day, including 3 runs in the bottom of the 5th, and they won the game 4-3. Steve Cishek, Justin Wilson, Pedro Strop, and Brandon Morrow combined to shut the game down, throwing 3 1/3 innings with 0 hits, 2 walks, and 5 strikeouts. Offensively for the Cubs, Anthony Rizzo hit a solo homer, and Albert Almora was 2-for-4 with a double. The Cubs began a 3-game weekend set with the Pittsburgh Pirates today, playing at 1:20 Central Time. That game will be broadcast on NBC Sports Chicago. Chad Kuhl will be taking on Mike Montgomery, and Kuhl was pretty impressive in his last start against the Cubs, which was, just like a week or two ago. He went 6 innings, allowing 4 hits and just 1 earned run. In fact, since allowing, this was Kuhl, I think he allowed 9 earned runs in an inning and 2/3, and that was back in April of 2017 against the Cubs. Since then, Kuhl has thrown 21 1/3 innings against the Cubs and has allowed just 5 earned runs. So he's actually been quite good over his last several starts against the Cubs. Montgomery has also been pretty good as a starter. In his last 2 with the Cubs this season have been excellent, combining for 11 2/3 innings, 4 hits, 1 walk, 9 strikeouts, and just 1 earned run. In both of those starts, he has thrown 76 pitches, and the guess is that today he could probably go 80 to 85 pitches, I would think, for the Cubs on the mound. So if he's economical again, maybe he gets through 6 innings, and hopefully the Cubs have a lead at that point, and they can bring in the bullpen like they did yesterday and shut it down. So fun with numbers. Here are some interesting stats that I thought I'd share that we could talk about briefly. Anthony Rizzo finally has his OPS over 800 on the season, but really he's been their best hitter for a while now. Rizzo has hit 317 with a 410 on base and a 608 slugging in his last 144 plate appearances, which stretches all the way back to May 1st. Javier Baez is still the National League RBI leader with 46, but Rizzo is sneakily close behind with 42, and that's really impressive when you remember that he missed several weeks with a back issue in April, and really his season didn't get rolling until maybe the last week or so of April or early May. So that's that just tells you everything you need to know about Rizzo as a hitter, but it also it tells you everything you need to know about the fact that he bats 3rd or 4th in the lineup and has guys on base in front of him quite frequently. That's going to give him a lot of RBI opportunities, even when he's struggling a bit. Being able to ground out for an RBI or hit a fly ball for an RBI, which he has done a few times this year. Ben Zobrist is also having a good season, very similar to his 2016 season with the Cubs, in fact. That year, Zobrist hit .272 with a .286 on base and a .446 slugging, and he had a .121 OPS plus. This year, he's hitting .292 with a .379 on base, a .442 slugging, and a .118 OPS plus. So the difference here is obvious. Ben Zobrist in 2016 played pretty much every single day, and this year he's playing basically just against favorable matchups. But the point is, it's really great to see Ben Zobrist healthy. Even though he's 37 years old, it's not the end of his career. He had a back injury. He had a wrist injury last year. It's good to see him bouncing back and being the hitter that he was, even if it just means playing in favorable matchups, maybe 7 out of every 10 days kind of thing. It's really good to see him producing because he is such a valuable part of this team. Chris Bryant has not had a home run since May 14th. Over his last 93 plate appearances, he's hitting .310, but with a slugging percentage of .393. So it's this weird thing, right, where you watch Chris Bryant and you feel like he's struggling, but then you go back and look and see that he's got like a 7-game hitting streak, or he's 2-for-4, or he's 1-for-3 with a walk. That those kinds of numbers are a bit misleading because Bryant is a power hitter, and his slugging percentage has dropped over the last few weeks from .583 to .509. So he's not hitting for power like he normally is. But the fun part about this, if you want to call it fun, is that Bryant has been in a slump in which he's batted .310. I mean, he's getting on base at .376, which is below his season number. It's below his career number, I believe. But still, .376 for the guy who's batting second or third in your lineup, that's a really good on base. So even when Chris Bryant is not hitting well, he's not seeing the ball well, there are times where you're watching him and you're like, man, what is going on with Chris Bryant? He just looks like he's lost at the plate. Then you look at his numbers and see he's still hitting for a high average. He's still getting on base at a reasonable average. It's really just the power has been missing. So that's something that you would assume that Bryant will come out of at some point and the power will return. And this guy is just, I mean, he's just going to have a monster year, I think. Since the start of May, Javier Baez is hitting .240 with a .248 on base and a .463 slugging with 7 home runs in 125 plate appearances. Baez has been really good overall with the Cubs this year. He's outstanding on defense. He's been hitting for more power than he has in recent years. He's been hitting the ball hard. But he's going through these stretches where the batting eye seemingly improves, and then he comes with these bad stretches where he swings at everything and pitchers are just going to give him less and less to hit. So far in June, Baez is 2-for-18 with a home run. So this is one of those things where, yeah, he's the RBI leader, and I think he's still the home run leader for the Cubs this year. He's been hitting for a ton of power. He's driving in runs. He's playing great defense. So this is a guy who's having an outstanding season overall. But really, it's just frustrating that Baez swings at all those pitches outside the strike zone, and he never takes a walk. I mean, it's really a very frustrating kind of Jekyll and Hyde that Javier Baez does right now. Looking at the pitching, over his last 9 starts, John Lester has a .194 ERA in 55 and 2/3 innings. I've been meaning to bring on my good friend Joel Reese to talk about that because I know how much of a big fan he is of John Lester and how he's been on the boat since the start of the season that Lester was going to have a great year. That's all kind of sarcastic. If anyone doesn't remember bringing on Joel earlier this year, Joel talked about how he was very concerned about John Lester. So I like to jab at him as much as I can. We text frequently during John Lester's starts. If Lester will come out in the first inning and give up a run, he'll text me and be like, see, I told you it was going to happen. And then, you know, when he ends up with like 6 2/3 innings with 2 earned runs and the Cubs are up like 6-2, I'm, you know, texting him back and saying, oh yeah, yep, John Lester's done, isn't he? Next starter, over his last 4 starts, Jose Quintana, .235 ERA in 23 innings with 29 strikeouts. Going to the bullpen, since Justin Wilson walked everyone in an extra inning walk-off loss to the Reds, he has now thrown 8 1/3 innings with 3 hits allowed, 5 walks, no runs, and he struck out 13 batters. On the season, Wilson has a 2.46 ERA with 11.9 strikeouts per nine in 25 and two-thirds innings. And those are the types of numbers that you would look at, just, you know, those few numbers and say, wow, this guy is like an elite back end of the bullpen reliever. But the walks are still just absurdly high. He's been getting away with it because he's striking out a ton of guys and he's not allowing hits. But Wilson has given up seven or more. Wilson has given up seven more walks than hits this season. Pedro Strop somewhat amazingly has the best walk rate of the bullpen regulars. He's walking 3.2 batters per nine innings. I had to read over that a couple times. When was the last time a pitcher with the best walk rate in one of the best bullpens in baseball was walking over three batters per nine? That blows me away. Something about this being the Cubs bullpen just seems like it makes guys like Steve Cishek walk more batters than they normally would. But so far, the Cubs have figured it out. On that note, here are some key stats comparing last year's Cubs bullpen in the second half, when everyone knows it was just a dumpster fire, to this year so far. 2017 second half, 4.7 walks per nine, 10.2 strikeouts per nine, with a 4.48 ERA. Now, the 2018 season so far, in I think it's maybe like 23 less innings, 4.4 walks per nine, 9.2 strikeouts per nine, 2.66 ERA. So the walks are almost exactly the same. They're striking out a batter per nine less, and yet the ERA is, you know, close to two runs lower. The big difference is that the bullpen last year had a batting average of balls in play against of 285, which is in the normal range. This year, the batting average on balls in play against for the Cubs bullpen is 250. Which is absurdly low. Now, do we think that's going to continue? I don't know. That's a good question. Are they going to be able to continue walking guys at the rate that they have been and striking out guys and then the balls in play, you know, three out of four times being outs? I don't know. The balls in play could spike a little bit as the rest of the season goes on. That number could rise, in which case the Cubs would start allowing more tough situations in the bullpen and probably burning their bullpen even more than they are now. So I guess the major point here is the thing that I've harped on in different ways throughout the last few weeks, is that the Cubs need more from their starters. They need to burn Steve Cishek quite a bit less. They need to be able to rest their bullpen more frequently. I'm not saying all the starters have to go out and throw eight and nine innings every day, but the occasional complete game, the occasional eight-inning start, the more frequent seven-inning starts, guys getting at least into the sixth or through the sixth more frequently would help a lot. And that doesn't just fall on the starters, that falls on Joe Maddon as well. A good example was how Jose Quintana was at 91 pitches and got pulled with 5 2/3 innings because he had a runner on first, and then he allowed an infield single. And then it was, you know, two on with two out. And so they pulled him for Steve Cishek. That was a situation where Jose Quintana definitely could have finished the inning, that Joe Maddon elected to allow him to. So that's really what I think is the magic potion for making sure the bullpen helps stay fresh in the second half and into the postseason, is by making sure that you don't have to work them quite as hard. And another thing that'll help is what the Cubs did in 2016, which is jumping on your opponent early and building up big leads. Now, that's what they did quite frequently throughout large stretches in 2016, was where they bludgeoned teams and had that amazing run differential. And, you know, that they didn't have a ton of, you know, one run games or two run games or three run games where they were protecting leads or they were behind by that amount where they were trying to keep the games close. They didn't have a lot of that in 2016 compared to 2017 and 2018 so far. So that's a big key as well, is getting a lot of those games where they build up that big lead and there's less pressure on the bullpen. Final segment, let's look around the NL Central briefly. The Cubs gained a little bit of ground with their win on Thursday. Let's check out how it happened. The Milwaukee Brewers were off, but every other team in the division played. The Pirates lost to the Los Angeles Dodgers 8-7. There were a lot of runs scored late in that game. It was, I think, 4-3 in favor of Los Angeles heading into the top of the seventh. The Cardinals beat the Marlins 4-1. Miles Michaelis had another outstanding start, lowering his ERA on the season to 2.27. The Cincinnati Reds also won, beating the Rockies 7-5 in 13 innings. Jesse Winker hit a walk-off two-run home run off our old friend Chris Russon. So here are the updated standings heading into Friday's games. The Brewers remain in first place, for now, mere percentage points ahead of the Cubs. They're 37-25 and a half game up. The Cubs are now 35-24. They still have the lowest amount of losses of any team in the National League with their 24 losses. They're winners of 9 of their last 11 and 19 of their last 28. The Cardinals are 3 games back, now 33-27. The Pirates are 6 back, sitting at 500 with a record of 31-31. And the Reds are now 15 and a half games back at 22-41. This has been episode 85 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Ryan Davis, the host, and you can find my work at Sporting News, The Athletic, Bet Chicago, Cubs Insider, the Cloud City Chronicle, all those places. You can find me somewhat intermittently doing my work. By far, the vast majority of the work that I do is done creating this podcast for you every day, and it's been a joy doing it. I don't know what the future has in store for this podcast and how far we're going down the road with it, but I've been enjoying doing it. I'm just going to keep riding the wave as long as it goes. So I hope you guys are enjoying it. Please, if you do like this podcast, go on iTunes. Even if you're not an iTunes listener, I think you can still do it. You can go on iTunes and leave us a 4 or 5 star review, however you feel about it, and then leave us, you know, the rating and a review telling me what you like about the podcast. If you have complaints or you hate me or whatever you want to say, you can feel free to email me at lockedoncubs@gmail.com. Send me those comments. I want to make this podcast enjoyable for everybody. And I'm, you know, been getting a lot of really good feedback, doing my best to do this for you. So, you know, send that information my way, even if it's just to email and say, hey, I like what you're doing. I have a question about this. Any comments or questions in the email are perfectly fine. Send those our way. It's again, lockedoncubs@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening, guys. I will talk to you again next week.